Hello and welcome. This is Survivor Stories, a series of conversations from Surviving Economic Abuse, the UK's only charity dedicated to raising awareness of economic abuse and transforming responses to it. My name is Marisa Bate, and today I'm here with Leslie. Leslie is a member of the Expert by Experience group, and along with other survivors, Leslie's insights and experiences help shape and guide all the work we do at sea. In light of the pandemic, today we'll be discussing what it is like to be a survivor of abuse in a time of national lockdown and isolation. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you.
So can I start by asking, what was your initial reaction when lockdown was announced?
So when lockdown was first announced, I was most concerned about my health. Because I'm a severe asthmatic, so I decided to shield actually the week before the schools were closed down. So I've been watching what had been going on in Spain, so I just followed their lockdown rules, and I hadn't received a letter from the NHS or anything from my doctor, but I just took that upon myself and inform my family and my friends that's what I was going to do. But I live on my own in a different area than I lived before, so I haven't got many friends yet. So I had no one really to talk about it to, you know, when you live, and I wasn't having anybody come to the door or anybody visit me. And I hadn't worked out yet then how to get food, because I still hadn't got my NHS letter to help me with the shielding. And so a few nights I started to think that I probably had COVID, but I wasn't sure whether I had COVID or whether I had bad asthma. And so I started to have nightmares about would I die in my bed on my own when I was getting really breathless. You know, I'd phoned 111, but they didn't say, well, you haven't got a temperature, so you haven't got COVID. I didn't want to phone an ambulance because I thought I will get COVID if I go to hospital or in an ambulance. So it was then really that started to bring back memories of what it used to be like actually living with an abuser when it was like living in a prison. So I started to get lots of memories, not very nice ones actually.
And that must have been a very difficult experience to have when you're isolated and on your own during the lockdown, to have to revisit that.
The night times were the worst, because actually the weather was nice, you know, March and April, the weather was nice. So in the daytime, you know, my breathing was much better. I mean, I didn't feel well, but I knew it was asthma, but at night time you believe different things, especially when you're alone, you've got no one to cuddle with. So sometimes I thought, gosh, I wish I was with somebody. And then in the daylight, and you're sitting in the garden, you think, no, I'm really glad I'm not with anybody. So you start to have anxiety again. It was really, really quite a strange time for me. I wasn't in a good place, actually.
It sounds very distressing. Were you in contact with friends and family during this time? Were you able to sort of talk to people on the phone? And
well, I didn't tell my family everything that went on. You know, obviously they knew why I had to leave, but all the really difficult and traumatic things that I went through when I lived with the abuser, they didn't need to know everything that happened. So, you know, I was just telling them how I hadn't felt well in the night and how I wish I could see them. And that was nice. And as I say, the weather really helped me. If it would have been raining all the time, I don't think I would have coped as well as I did.
I agree. Those sort of light evenings made a big difference, didn't they? I think to everyone's peace of mind.
Yeah.
That's a lot to carry on your own. What was it like when lockdown was sort of lifting and you thought you might be able to kind of move out of lockdown and start to see people again?
Actually, I was quite scared because after, I was quite ill with the asthma and everything for quite a long time. And then I got used to it. It was quite nice because then they said you could have a support bubble. So I was had one person living on my own. So that was nice. I had somebody visiting. But then, I still haven't been into a shop yet.
Wow.
I started to see the safety parts of being having a lockdown for somebody who's still scared of their abuser finding them. So people now leave things, parcels on your door, they knock and then they go. People wear masks, so at least that hides some of you. So I became more anxious that things might go back to normal, where you become scared again of going places and people recognizing you. So that might
Right.
seem silly to people, but
No,
I don't know.
that's really fascinating. So actually for you, lockdown lent a certain amount of safety in that you were removed from the world,
Yes.
and coming back into the world reintroduced that fear of for your safe for a different type of safety.
Yeah. So I went to hospital for the first time last week, just for an X-ray, and that's a really busy place, hospitals, and they write to me just in case they call your name out, and somebody may know you, even though I live a long way away, so perhaps that's never going to happen, but you still have that fear. And there were four people in the waiting room. Now, normally there's about 40 people, and you wait about 2 hours to be seen. There were four people in there, and I got called for my X-ray within 4 minutes. So for me, that was such a huge relief. So
Wow.
that made me feel better, So this life for me is so much better, even though it's
Well,
very sad, if that makes sense.
yeah, I think that does make sense. And I think it also what you're saying illuminates how, if you are a survivor of abuse, would it be fair to say, you're always living with some kind of lockdown that perhaps non-survivors wouldn't be aware of, as in you are constantly thinking about your safety,
Oh, all the time.
in a way that non-survivors do not, and that they're only now thinking of their safety in terms of coronavirus and getting the virus, but you always have to think about your safety.
Yeah, all the time. So even though it may be, so I left my survivor now 6 years ago, and in everything I do, even if it's subconsciously, you have to think about it. Where am I going to stand? How many people are in that queue? How long will I be stood in that shopping queue? Like, if it's too long, then I'm going to go and come back another day. So now, because of coronavirus, people probably think, oh, that queue's too long. I may have a
Yeah.
chance of getting coronavirus, so I'll come back another day.
But you've already been thinking about
Yeah.
in those terms.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Does it make you feel now that other people think like that? Is that any weird kind of consolation that perhaps you're not the only one looking over your shoulder in that way or not?
I've never thought of that actually.
Yeah, it must be a huge amount of stress for you to carry that constant alertness, because I think that's new for a lot of people, that there's kind of high alertness to their safety, whereas before they would have just walked out the house and not thought twice about how many people were in the queue. But carrying that for 6 years must be pretty exhausting.
It is exhausting, but until I've said it to you, I think it's just a habit. So you don't think of it as stress, but it obviously is. But that's just becomes your way of life. So it's your normal. It's not everybody's normal, but that is just your normal. So if the doorbell rings, I only live in a tiny house, but if the doorbell rings, I don't answer it. I go upstairs, I look out the window, I see who it is, and then decide whether I can answer it or not.
Yeah, you have your own kind of perimeters and your own rules for what makes you feel safe.
Yeah, so on parcel deliveries, say for Amazon, they put a box, any instructions I put, it may take me a long time to answer the door.
Wow.
It's just my way of staying safe so that I can live a more normal life than I did. Because now I know it definitely was an abusive life that, you know, I lived in an abusive relationship and it wasn't my fault. So I now know that.
Absolutely. When news of the virus sort of started to really kind of, I guess, make front page news, did you start to begin to think of what it might have been like if you had still been with your ex-partner?
Oh, absolutely. It came back. I was having horrendous nightmares. So previously, when I lived with my abusive partner, I'd actually been in isolation with him. So I'd been quite ill, well, seriously ill. And because of the illness that I had and the medication I'd taken, I needed to have surgery, but I kept getting infections. So in order to have this surgery, they made a clinical decision that if I could go 3 weeks without antibiotics, they would carry out this essential surgery. So myself and my husband had to stay indoors so I didn't get any germs. And it meant that, you know, my grandchildren and children could wave at the windows. I could have telephone calls, WhatsApp, you know, basically similar to what happened in lockdown. And actually, at first, he was quite supportive. But actually, supportive means very different things than the dictionary definition with an abuser. And I think that was when I was first ill, that was because there were lots of people around. You know, they were bringing food because I had mobility problems. And I was so ill, you know, I was in and out of hospital. So he was this caring, outwardly caring person. And then when it was just the two of us, it was just like a prison, even more so. So, you know, they'd come to the window and wave, and he'd be giving, I could feel this look in my back if I dare sort of mouth that anything was wrong. He would say that I needed to stay in bed the whole time. I needed his help to get down the stairs. If my family phoned, he'd say, oh, I was resting or sleeping, so I couldn't speak to them, which I didn't. You know, I had a laptop, and then he'd tell them that I couldn't send emails because he'd found me working, which I hadn't been. And then he said I was too independent and, you know, I was trying to do things that I shouldn't. So he needed me to stay in bed all the time. And then he was shouting at me and humiliating me, and I couldn't get away from it. Whereas before, at least I'd gone to work, or he'd gone out, or I'd be able to go around friends. It was just there all the time, and the abuse just got worse and worse. And then, you know, he broke my phone, and my iPad, but he said I'd been trying to get down the stairs by myself. And then he'd phone my family and tell them how strong-willed and independent I was. And they'd agree with him, you know, and say what a good person he was and how you're grateful for everything he was doing. And what he was doing, you know, was not giving me food or water. And then he put the TV on in the bedroom, full volume, take the remote away and leave that on for 48 hours so I couldn't get any sleep. Or we'd go downstairs or in another bedroom. So for 2 days, I had no TV or anything and take the remote with him. One day, I thought he was being kind. He said I could go in the garden because I love the sunshine. And he gave me a bottle of water, put some cream on first of all. I must have fallen asleep in the garden, you know, because I had like a sofa bed, you know, there's some garden furniture thing. And when I woke up, he'd taken my crutches away. And I was out in the sun for 6 hours with no water. I needed to go to the toilet. And then when we came back, you know, I said, why did you do that? You know, and he physically assaulted me and said, you know, he hadn't married a cripple. Why didn't I get back myself? You know, and I knew where the front door was if I didn't like it. So it was just like that all the time. And then after about 2 weeks, he started to go out. But the idea was that I didn't get infections. So he'd go out late at night, you know, very late when neighbours had gone to bed, get a taxi, come back early hours of Monday mornings, so go Friday, night, and I'd be on my own with just a bottle of water. And if he'd missed it when he threw it at me and it went on the floor, you know, I had to hurt myself to get it. So if he'd have been with me when it was the coronavirus, knowing how high risk I was, without a doubt, he would not have stayed in the house. Without a doubt, he now probably has not complied with government regulations, and I probably would have had it. So, it took me 4 months before I had the surgery, and they expected 3 weeks. So obviously I was getting ill, you know, I wasn't eating, I lost weight because he wasn't feeding me or giving me food. He took my credit card and my debit card to buy the food because it was my fault that he couldn't work. He bought a car. He took out a car loan in joint names, even though I couldn't go with him. He misused my money. And afterwards, I left the relationship. I realised all the money that he'd abused of mine whilst I was ill. So, you know, once I left, then it does take years to realise that you are better, but there is help out there and support. So whilst it was difficult while I was in the lockdown this time, I do know how much better off I was.
Wow. And you really, you experienced what I'm sure many experienced this time round, in that terms of that being isolated, trapped in the house, completely dependent, completely under, you know, at, he could control to such frightening levels. So you have an absolute understanding of what so many, as we know, have endured over the last 5 months or however long it's been.
And when people are not expecting to see you because you are in isolation, then they can get away with a lot more, because they know that you're meant to be inside and you're not meant to be outside. So what they do to you is even more cruel than what they were doing before. I mean, my abuse, the abuse that he gave to me was just intensified. It was, you know, I can't even tell you because I just get too upset what he did to me.
Of course. And you think that, you know, it's from what you're saying, it sounds very much that he saw your illness in perhaps the same way an abuser would see lockdown, as an opportunity.
Absolutely. I mean, he used to sing, I'm going to get £100,000 death in service money, you know, to the tune of Happy Birthday. You know, and I think when I got more ill, that made him crosser, because I think he did want me to die. But I didn't, and I'm here.
Here you are, absolutely. Was there an element at all of being in this lockdown and being able to see now that you are safe, that you had left that behind you, and you was there ever a moment where you you know, obviously you're very fearful for your health, and that sounds very, very frightening, but I wonder if now that you're not in, you're out of that, you're away from him, was there a moment in this lockdown where you thought, I'm here and I'm okay?
Oh, absolutely. As I say, once those nights were, I was having the nightmares came back, but I was also frightened. But in the daytime, the reality just came back. Gosh, this is my little house. It might not be a great big house, and I definitely don't have very much money. And I did struggle to get the food for 5 weeks. You know, I did eat an awful lot of soup, but I was eating, you know, and I could go out into my little tiny garden, but I could choose when I came in. If I wanted to stay in bed when I didn't feel well, I could. If I woke up in the night, I've never have a telly in my bedroom again. But I could come downstairs and watch the TV, or I could read a book, or I could go to the toilet if I wanted. Some days he wouldn't even let me go to the toilet, you know, in the middle of the night if I needed to go. I think that's why I've got kidney problems. So I have decisions and I have choices, which I've never had. You know, if I wanted to phone my family up, I can phone them up. You know, I did homeschooling with my grandchildren, you know, and we had quizzes. You know, it was every day, you know, I did started to do that in middle of April, I think. So that gave me a routine. I had to get up every morning to do the homeschooling with them.
And how
Yeah,
did
that
that
was
make you feel doing things
joyous. That was lovely. They loved it. You know, every day, Nanny, we didn't know you were a teacher.
that?
I couldn't do any of the maths. You know, I kept saying, "Oh, you're so clever," but I mean, they just loved it. So, and I did as well. I would never have been allowed to do that. You know, so it gave me some. You know, oh, it was just wonderful. Yeah, I just loved it.
That's fantastic to hear.
So you do, you know, it may be a very different life for what you had before, but you're not being abused. And you're your own person again. And it's definitely little tiny small steps. And there are steps where you have to go backwards a bit. But when you go on those backwards steps, you haven't got anybody hitting you or stealing your money. You know, you might only have £5, but that £5 is yours. You're not then going to get, find that you're in debt for £5,000.
I wonder if you were thinking about other women who might be in the position you were in, and what you would want to say to them if they were listening to this.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is so hard to, when you're in that relationship, to leave. You know, I used to ask myself the questions like, can I, you know, what would happen if I leave? You know, would it be safe? You know, who will believe me? Where will I get the support from? How will I manage? Will I have enough money? Where will I live? You know, I stayed for 14 years, you know, and I'm meant to be a sensible person, you know, and strong and independent. And in the end, I had just had no confidence whatsoever to do anything. But you have to do it. And actually, there's so much help out there, you know, and so much awareness. You know, I mean, you've got Coronation Street, you know, the police are so much more aware now. There's so many organizations, even, you know, neighbors and just ordinary people. I don't mean ordinary like that, but awareness of amongst everybody, you know, shopkeepers talk about it because it's on, you know, radio programs, television programs. People want to help. You know, it's not a taboo subject anymore. And please leave because the help's there and you can become the woman that you were before you went into that relationship. And you deserve it because it really isn't your own fault, you know. They are the abusers. They've made you into that person with no confidence and no self-esteem. They're the ones who are wrong, and you deserve to get back what you had before. And your children deserve it if you've got children as well. They need that mummy back. Yes. But, you know, even babies know, you know, babies crawl away from shouting, and they know. People who are pregnant, you know, babies in the womb understand that it's not right. So it's so important that people seek help and get to safety, really. And you don't have to be hit, you know. I would say, you know, go on to the C website and see what help is there, because there is
Absolutely.
so much help there.
Absolutely, isn't it? And that's the message that we want to share, is that because you talk about that incredible isolation that you experienced, and what I'm sure many experienced during lockdown. And that I assume makes some kind of, can make some kind of big distance between you and the rest of the world. But there is support, and there are plenty of people who want to help and who can help.
I mean, I never told anybody, not even my best friend. And that's where I went wrong. And now I know I should have told at least somebody. Because when I didn't have access to phones or anything, I couldn't look for anything. So even if your phone's been taken away, ask to use somebody's phone, go to a library and use the resources there, take the children to a toddler group and ask somebody there, can they help, or ask to use their iPads or computers.
Well,
Because the help is there.
I was just going to say, I think the work you do with C, raising awareness is so important and so powerful. And I think it's such a testament to who you are and the strength you have to be able to share your story and in the way you do. I think it's really remarkable. It can't be easy. It can't be an easy thing to do.
Well, I'm here because, eventually I did have the courage to leave, but, I suffered for that because, it took the worst beating I'd ever had to make me leave, and I wouldn't want anybody to go through that. So, if you can find just that strength to leave, but if you can have support to find that strength to leave, that's a better way to do it than the way I did it.
Yeah, well, I think your words will alone provide support, I'm sure, for whoever might be listening to this. Thank you so much,
All right.
Leslie.
Pleasure.
It's always a privilege to talk to you, and I think the power of your words is not to be underestimated. So thank you so much, and it's great to see you are healthy and well in these strange times we live in. And so thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
If you think you might be experiencing economic abuse, phone the police in the first instance. You can also contact the National Domestic Violence Helpline for support on 0808 2000 247. For more information and resources to support you, search for survivingeconomicabuse.org and head to our resources page.